Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Carl and Sarah, thank you. And welcome to the Halftime Report, everybody. I'm clearly not Scott Wapner. I'm Brian Sullivan in on this Friday. And front and center today, the road ahead for your money. The S&P 500, I'm sorry to say, on track to close out its worst week of the year. But have no fear, because your investment committee is here to help you navigate the pullback, the volatility, and really the global macro risk that is out there right now. And that committee is an all-star bunch today. We've got Joe Terranova, Stephanie Link, and Bill Baruch. Now, we're going to get to them in just a moment. But first, here's how your money looks. And not great. Not as bad as it could have been given what we saw last night, the hair trigger selling in futures in Asia on word that Israel was striking back in Iran. We learned that it was a fairly measured response by Israel, probably just to send a message. The markets have calmed down a bit, but technology is getting hit. And one of your committee, just before the show, comes up, she goes, "So I just gave it away."
You did.
Yeah.
I'm not good at this job. ABT, anything but technology. All right, so we're going to get to that in a moment. But related to all the geo macro stuff that's going on is our starting point. That is a trade alert. The aforementioned Stephanie Link just made a big trade in the energy patch. That is the company formerly known as Schlumberger, SLB. Sales up 13%, GAAP EPS up 14%, net income up 14%. And you're buying more.
It was a good quarter. It always trades
off. That sounds like a good quarter.
It always trades off on the quarters. I don't know why, because all the numbers you just cited, right? I mean, you have earnings up 19%. You have revenues up 13%. Adjusted EBITDA up 15%. They're talking about the cycle being elongated because of their pipelines are so much stronger than what they expected in terms of business. And so that, to me, when I heard that on the call, I'm like, this is silly. It's down 21%. From its highs, and it trades at a very attractive valuation of 14 times forward estimates for the number one player the industry.
Okay, so I spoke with the CEO, Olivier Lepouche,
yes.
At the CERO. Did you like that?
That was a great interview.
He's like it's a James Bond name.
That was a great interview.
And thank you. It's about a month ago, and he was bullish on pretty much every segment of their business. They've got this, and I'm always skeptical when they say we're transforming, Joe. It's a digital, we're a software. Everybody says that. But the numbers do seem to confirm that move, and yet it doesn't get a lot of respect from the markets.
No, it certainly doesn't. We're going to get a lot of energy earnings next week. You have Chevron, you have ExxonMobil, you have Hess, Valero, Halliburton. So we'll hear the story. But, you know, I think there was a degree of skepticism surrounding oil heading into the quarter. We've gotten the lift. A lot of it is certainly on the Mideast tensions. But the overall environment, look, we've disincentivized the growth of production. We're seeing that demand is beginning to slowly rise. And I think from an asset allocation perspective, for the very first time, investors have to think to themselves, maybe this is different. Commodities aren't a boom bust cycle. Maybe commodities are entering a phase, a secular phase, where they belong in investor portfolios, maybe single digit portfolio allocation. But I think we're entering that type of environment because that demand versus supply imbalance, I think that's staying with us for many years.
Well, what's also staying with you is free cash flow. I mean, these companies are generating an enormous amount of free cash flow, and they're not pumping it into production. Yes, they are doing some of that, as they should, but they are returning it to shareholders. And that's exactly what we have wanted from these companies, so that you don't have these boom-bust cycles.
Obviously, energy is my jam, as they say,
yes,
and I want the audience to know. I did not stack the show to start with energy today. It was our executive producer's decision, but I think it was
kind
the right
one. Important today.
It was the right one. It was important. And here's, you said something interesting. You said the word phase, and you were talking about phasing in, which is interesting because a lot of people are going to be surprised, Bill, that we heard a lot, and I don't want to get political, but we heard a lot about phasing out fossil fuels, right, during the previous campaign. All right, I want to be very clear. Even the most bearish estimates, which is the International Energy Agency, which has been wrong, has oil growing the next number of years and possibly next number of decades. That's the most bearish. And yet there is this mind, I think, investors have, Bill, that, oh, well, they're going away, so why invest? They're not going away. No. Oil demand growth is only going up.
Yeah, it's true. And I like the phrase, petroleum runs the world. There are so many products that are made and derived from petroleum, it's not going anywhere. Now,
the body of a Tesla is made from plastics and natural gas derivatives.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's really a great thing. From where I'm looking at it right now, we're 10% energy, and we've been leaning into it, really leaning into the refiners. We did get out of Schlumberger, I think, in January ahead of that earnings report because I was a little bit nervous about how it would react after the earnings report. And as you said, it hasn't always acted great, even though they had a great quarter. If I was going to add another name outside of the refiners right now, I would lean into SLB. One thing I am making note of mentally, as I am over. Overweight at 10%, you have to be cautious. Is oil heading into maybe a seasonal top towards the end through Memorial Weekend? That's typically where I would look to see maybe a stall. The refiners are leading some downside, but the refiners have had these big spikes, and then they consolidate, and then they could spike again. So that's what I'm watching right here. But you know, we did have the geopolitical spike in oil last night. Does that bring a short-term top? So I'm just cautious right here as somebody that is overweight.
So I want to caution the viewers because I think what happens is that the viewers see the price of oil going from $86 overnight to below $83, and automatically they say to themselves, okay, well, oil's failing here, and therefore my investment in energy equities, I need to reduce those allocations. And I completely disagree with that. Do not look at the spot price of oil as the ultimate referendum on what you're doing in investing in energy.
Why not?
You have to look at the long term. You have to look at the long term and think about the secular change that I identified in my opening remarks. Look, you want to talk about oil, the front month expires on Monday. It is in backwardation. If I go 12 months out, you're talking about $75 oil. If I go 24 months out, it's $70 oil. If I go 36 months out, it's $68 oil. In the near term, which Brian knows this well, June 1st is a big OPEC meeting. At that point, we're gonna hear a lot about the potential to lift some of the curbs. Saudi Arabia needs to lift the curbs. They're running a fiscal deficit. Their economy last year was in contraction. They need to pump more oil above the 9 million barrels that they're pumping today. So in the near term, there could be some headwinds on price itself. But as long as price is staying in that $70 to $85 range, that's so beneficial to these companies on the free cash flow that you talk about.
The cash flow break-evens at Exxon and Chevron is 35. For oil. That's where they make money. So obviously, anything above that, it's just great.
And a lot of analysts from Morningstar to other banks, they are marking these names at 60 in the 60s, not even above 70 on oil. So as long as oil stays there, the free cash flow is going to be generated at a higher pace than expected.
I should be, pending some unexpected circumstance, be at that OPEC meeting, which, thank you, OPEC, is over the weekend again, because it is so critical, to your point. Saudi's 2 million cuts, 6.6 million spare barrel capacity. We'll see. Very quickly, we're going to move on in a second. Bill, I do quickly. Is 80 to 85 really the sweet spot for oil? It's enough to print that free cash flow Stephanie was talking about, but not high enough to cause demand destruction on the gasoline side.
I do agree with that. I think the 80 is the sweet spot. Technically speaking, 78 was a big resistance that now we broke out above. And if we could settle in here above there, I think that's going to be a really great for the cash flow of these equities that you speak of.
Okay, let's move on, broaden it out, because a very wise person about 10 minutes ago told me ABT, which is the theme of this show's hour. We just made that up. But it's anything but technology. And you looked at me and you said, Brian, we have got a massive rotation going on.
Yeah,
right now.
We've had it for a couple of weeks now. I hope it lasts. I think it will, because I think that the earnings are going to be pretty good for the overall market. But I think that it's like, if you look at the Russell 1000 growth, and I look at the Russell 1000 value, and back in February 9th, the spread between the two was 900 basis points. Growth was outperforming value. Today, you're at 250 basis points. That spread has narrowed. cloud. And that's what I'm talking about. So it is, it's more than anything but tech, but we are seeing energy, as we talked about. Financials have really come back nicely after they reported earnings and when they all sold off. You had a lot of people be buying. I was actually adding to Morgan Stanley. You've had materials do well, parts of discretionary that's done well. And so tech at the same time has actually kind of rolled over. It'll be interesting
to see. Why is the rotation?
I think it's all about interest rates. It's all about interest rates, right? I mean, you don't want to own long duration assets if rates are going to stay higher for longer. And it's clear that we're going to have higher rates for longer, whether they cut once. I don't think they're going to cut at all this year. But the point being is, it's not.
We're the no cut camp, which I think is getting a little more attention.
And I'll take the other side of that. I still think three cuts are on the table potentially. If you look at July from the Fed watch tool from the CME group, it's still 45% probability. There is some solid probability that we would see three cuts this year. Now, I look back to January when they released the December retail sales numbers as pretty pivotal. And I think that we saw, I mean, I think Josh Brown has really talked about the narrative quite a bit, that the high net worth individuals with $10 million of investable capital or so, they're sitting and they're driving the services economy much stronger than anybody ever would have thought. And I mean, if you have $10 million in your bank account, you can get $500,000 a year of risk-free return. And they're spending this money. I think there's also people moving into more of an entrepreneurship type role. It's distorting the job market. I think the Fed should bring down rates in order to start kind of easing the economy. People could say that housing would blow from there. No, I think housing would actually, there's a piece of the pie that would be a tornado of activity for 6 months, and then it would cool off. And actually, I think prices could come down from there. So I think it's very interesting here right now. And then you look at the small business survey, NHIB survey this morning, and 60% of all companies are small businesses. It was at the lowest level in 11 years. These companies are struggling. The American Express on CNBC this morning, the CEO talked about small businesses getting more credit lines. That's good for American Express, but it's telling you there could be struggling somewhere. So I think within the economy, there are pieces here that are very distorted, and the Fed knows that, but they can't talk easy right now because of the market's reaction function. They are managing the market's reaction function, and I think they got what they wanted over the past couple days, past couple weeks.
Okay, so where we are right now is in a very precarious place. And I sat with Scott Wapner yesterday on Closing Bell, and in my closing remarks, I said I thought the market was close to bottoming. But I will tell you, and I'm always looking to see where I'm wrong, I am going to be completely wrong on that if technology continues to trade the way technology is trading. If we could pull up a six-month chart of Apple, and as we do that to the viewers, ask yourself, what has the overall market done in the last 6 months? Well, now look at Apple in the last 6 months. Apple is now at its lowest level in the last 6 months. As we're speaking right now, Nvidia on the decline, back to the 805 to 810 area. So technology and these mega caps are incredibly important. A third of the S&P is going to be reporting this week. Four of those big mega cap companies are going to be reporting, and we need these companies. Yeah. We need these companies to deliver, because what's happened now from a technical perspective is you've now completed closing the gap from the Nvidia earnings breakout in February that Mike Santoli has been talking about. 49.83, I believe, is the bottom. You're now below it with the S&P at 49.78. You're now below that level. So I have to have these technology companies deliver.
Lows of the day for the market, and S&P on track for its sixth down day in a row, which has not happened this year. I don't think it's happened for a long time, because we've been in this giant uptrend. Jim Cramer this morning, I was listening as I was driving in, and he said, meaning the market doesn't have a bullish thesis right now. He's like, give me a thesis, give me a reason to buy macro. So that's what Jim was talking about from a macro market perspective. What is, if you were making the bullish thesis for the market at large, Stephanie, what is it?
It's we have better growth. We are growing about 2.9% here in GDP in the first quarter.
Toppy multiples.
We grew 3.4% last year. We were supposed to be in a recession by now. That's number one. Number two, IMF, they revised their global growth higher, 3.2% earlier this week. China, 5.5% GDP, the second quarter in a row over 5.3%, second quarter in a row of over 5. They're running at 6.6% annualized rate in GDP. So the better growth is the reason, in my mind, why inflation, that last mile, has been so stubborn and sticky. And I think if, and it's all because of fiscal stimulus. We put $8 trillion of fiscal stimulus into the system 4 years ago, and it takes a long time to get into the system. So why does that matter for the markets? Because I think better growth is going to lead to better earnings. And better earnings, we know stocks follow earnings on the way up and on the way down. And so I think you're going to have probably like 8 to 10% in earnings growth this year. So yeah, okay, elevated multiples in technology. That's why you're seeing them pull back. But you're not in elevated multiples in all those sectors I talked about. Financials are trading at like 1.1 times book. Energy companies are trading at like 5-6 times earnings.
Yes.
Industrials.
But nobody cares.
Well, they're going to have to.
They're going to start to care. You added more SLB today.
Sure.
I would say this. Everybody, Bill, loved the Magnificent Seven or whatever they're called now on the way up. And I described the market one time as a bowling ball on top of a pencil. And these huge tech companies kind of controlled everything. But underneath it, you just hope that the pencil held. It feels that the pencil may not hold. Yeah. We love the Mag 7 and all the big tech on the way up. But to Joe's point, Apple, weak. If NVIDIA starts to slide, can the overall market, the S&P 500, go up if some of those companies, even a couple of them, don't participate?
I think we can rally. I think the market could actually finish pretty good this year without participation from all seven of those. We've seen it without Apple. We've seen it without Tesla. A new name shows up, and they rotate around, and it happens. I think one of the really interesting things today, and I'm a little disappointed that the market hasn't been able to hold the early rally, but Bank of America had a survey that came out that said over the last 2 weeks, there's been the most outflows of stocks since December 2022. And we know what happened in January 2023. So I think you look at last night in the futures market, there was real capitulation taking place, and we opened higher this morning. That's the type of thing I want to look for to make a bottom. But
well, that was like panic selling trigger on the Israel-Iran news. The Nikkei fell 3% in about 2 minutes.
Well, that's how capitulation happens. Capitulation and volume do create bottoms. And so the day's not over yet, but you look at outflows over the last 2 weeks, which probably didn't even include yesterday. I think the numbers maybe a Wednesday number. But so I think we're working through a lot of negativity. The fear index is improving to get more fear in the market. So those are things that I would look for the market to bottom out.
You look at the semiconductors, they're just falling apart.
And that, I think
and that is ASML, but that is also TSMC.
TSMC kind of kneecapped the semis, didn't they?
They certainly really did. But guess what? The SMH is still up 15% on the year.
Yeah.
So it's easy to take profits, and you probably should. I mean, I've actually been taking profits, and the stocks kept going higher and higher and higher, but that's the thing that I'm watching the
most. Well, I do love your it's such an important context, and I would expect nothing less from Stephanie Link, which is we're acting like the market's down 30% in a year. I mean, the stock market is done.
5% off its all-time high.
Yeah. It's 5% off its, and we're like, oh, God.
But that doesn't mean
crying. Peter Tuckman over here is weeping openly. It's like the market is still close to its highs.
Doesn't mean it can't go down another 5%. And I think that's what we're trying to identify today. As I said earlier, what was important to me was the earnings of mega caps and these technology companies, and certainly a communication services company that ended the Blockbuster video career. We'll talk about that stock in a little bit.
I don't have that on my bingo card. Blockbuster video.
Yeah, Blockbuster video. But you have to understand we're in a perilous position right now. It's a Friday.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a Friday, which means you have a lot of systematic algorithm selling that's going to occur on a Friday.
What if we end on our lows? What if we end on our lows today?
That doesn't mean anything to me. Do you liquidate your portfolio? No. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we ended on the lows. That's where near-term momentum is. And Sunday night, if nothing happens over the weekend, the market comes in and it comes in higher. I don't look at markets that way, that trying to time it overall. I agree with the comments. I think structurally, we're in a very bullish place.
Yeah.
You've got the profit margin expansion. You have the earnings growth, but we're in the midst of a little much-needed correction.
My guess is some of your buddies, all your CTA bros in Chicago with 18 monitors on their computer, they do care if we end on the lows.
Yeah.
Because they're not looking at earnings. They're looking at charts
and that
momentum.
Would trigger more selling. That's what's driving a lot of the selling. We're closing the lows. Every rally is getting faded, closing the lows each day. But, turning back to the fundamental side, I think you guys made some great points. ASML, TSM, Sam, they threw cold water over the chip trade. And there is definitely fear that these companies and these CEOs are going to use this quarter to bring down and just soften some of the expectations a little bit. And ultimately, could that actually create a bottom and surprise the upside if they don't and we see strong results? So that next week is just going to be hugely pivotal for everything.
Well, we get a PCE next Friday. Yeah. A lot could change with that number. Yeah.
What if it's hot?
Well, that's a problem.
Then we go. Then I think more people come into the camp. Can we come into the no cut camp? We've been over at the one cup camp, but
if that's hot,
you have a better fire.
My three cuts are going to go down to one if that's hot.
But if it's cold,
then I'm hammering down that three.
The CPI was hot.
Then we'll be leaving our camp to come over and see if you got marshmallows.
It's nice over here. The water's warm.
It's like two of you left though.
I mean, the CPI was hot because of shelter, right? That's 35% of the weighting, and that was really hot. That was a 5.7%.
And car insurance.
Of course, car insurance, but.
Nothing else Jerome Powell can do. Jay Powell can't do anything about the price of anyone's car insurance.
Right. Yeah.
So you want to fight inflation? Don't worry, I'm going to bring down your Allstate or what? No, he can't
but
do
PPI,
anything.
PPI was better, was more controlled, and there's more components that go from the PPI into the PCE versus the CPI. I know we're losing a lot of viewers here, right?
It's like a wordle.
But my point being is, like, I think the number is going to be fine. I mean, I think it's going to be 2.7, 2.8, and I think the market would be fine with that.
What matters
but that's
is that
still
it's
not
below
2%.
Three. Yeah, as long as it's below 3, I think that can be digested. That's the important thing.
Agreed.
Why don't we move on?
Let's do it.
Apparently, this show doesn't have commercial breaks, which is
that's fit. Good. Let's keep going. What do we want to go to next? How about that streaming company that took out Blockbuster Video? I'm not happy with them.
Yeah, you're talking about our chart of the day.
Let's do it.
Did you read? You read the rundown ahead of time because it's Netflix.
No,
is our chart of the day. Shares aren't happy. Investors aren't happy. Joe Terranova's not happy.
No, I'm not happy.
Why are you not happy?
Because I stuck my neck out yesterday on closing bell, and I said they're going to deliver on margins, they're going to deliver on the profitability. You're going to see one of the strongest quarters that you've had for this company since 2020. I pointed out the fact that it was 13% below its all-time high. There was plenty of room for further upside potential. And then what do, Netflix? You change all the rules on me. You tell me afterwards, all right, I get it, the forecast was a little bit dour, but now you're telling me that you're no longer going to disclose quarterly subscribers? Why? What is it that we needed to have that implemented yesterday? It destroyed all of the positive near-term momentum that we had, and it made me look like a fool.
But no, it didn't.
Oh, it did.
You're being too hard on yourself, because I think you were right.
It was a good quarter.
On the metric.
It was a phenomenal quarter.
It was a phenomenal quarter.
Phenomenal.
I think Netflix, and I'm looking at numbers, it's not my opinion, Netflix getting caught up in some of the tech sell-off stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Number two, they didn't like the whole I'm not going to reveal subscriber numbers. By the way, starting in a year. So we're going to get another 9 months of subscriber data before, and Netflix can always unchange its mind.
Yeah.
I want to be clear, Joe, and we'll back you up. Laura Martin, Needham, probably the most influential analyst on Netflix and a lot of media and tech, upgraded Netflix today. She's been negative, for a long time. Thinks content spending is going to be stable, free cash flow generation is going to go up, global scale, and yes, I have to say it contractually, AI will also... Also, I'm kidding on that. I don't have to say it, but it is in Laura's note. So they did upgrade Netflix today. I think Netflix is just kind of getting caught in the tide, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but when you take a key metric out of the equation, that's not good. It just isn't. I mean, it invites more on the unknown.
Especially,
and that's just didn't have to be that way. Really.
They're focusing on advertising, right? They're focusing on advertising, and they don't have to. You say they don't have to do that, but they're focusing on advertising. The advertising money is going to come in knowing who they're going to, the audience that they're going to hit. So that's a big thing right now, I think, too.
Well, it's also trading at 31 times forward estimates, and this kind of market doesn't want 31 times.
I'm not suggesting that you sell the stock. I'm just saying I'm disappointed in what I heard yesterday afternoon. Overall, is the positive momentum still in place for the stock? Absolutely. In January, remember, you had that breakout gap. You're still above that gap. You're testing the 100-day moving average. You could point to technicals. They still look bullish. I'm just disappointed in what I heard.
Okay.
That's all.
And by the way, just love the raw honesty. But Netflix, you disappointed Joe and Stephanie, and that's not fair. We got a news alert right now from Washington, D.C. Let's get to Emily Wilkins on Capitol Hill. Emily, what's going on?
Hey, Brian. Well, as you know, just moments ago, the House did move forward on that package of $95 billion to Ukraine. But of course, you have a lot of conservative hardliners who did not like that package, and now you are seeing the blowback from that vote. Paul Gosar, a Republican and hardliner from Arizona, is out with a new statement saying that if there is a vote on removing Speaker Mike Johnson, he will vote to do so. Now, that brings the number of Republicans who would vote to remove up to three. And if all Democrats also vote against Speaker Johnson, I mean, it depends a little bit on the math of who's in and who's absent. But assuming everyone's there, that is enough votes to oust Johnson. Gosar said in a statement that they need a speaker who puts America first rather than bending the reckless demands of the warmongers, neocons, and the military-industrial complex making billions from a costly and endless war half a world away. It really does remain to be seen at this point whether we're going to see that the initial motion to remove Johnson come up. We know that the House is now in recess until Saturday. They got to come back. They got to take that final vote on Ukraine. We'll see what happens then. But at this point, you know, this could be the end of the line for Johnson. And he said all this week, he's called himself a wartime speaker. He said what is happening on the national stage, the international stage, is kind of more important than what his future is going to be. He's very much stuck by the fact that moving this aid for Ukraine, it's about $60 billion for Ukraine, is the right thing to do at this time. And he's really sort of stuck with his guns, even as frustration among members in the Republican conference have been rising.
Wow. Emily Wilkins, Capitol Hill, spending bill going through. Maybe Speaker Mike Johnson is out. I don't want to bring politics into a bill, but it did appear the market moved a little bit as this news started to trickle out. I would say that Congress, particularly the House GOP, is a dumpster fire, but I don't want to offend dumpster fires because I've seen some lovely ones. Does this political stuff matter to you and the stock market?
I mean, the market's reacting on it, and we've seen a leg lower. Maybe it's in reaction to some of the news coming out right now. I mean, I think momentum's shifting to the downside. I'm more looking out really on the political side after the election, no matter who wins. As we look into next year, they're going to have to crack down on this fiscal spending in general, and that could be a headwind for risk assets.
All right. You got the headlines from D.C.?
You're not going to a commercial, are you?
We're apparently going to have a commercial, yeah.
Okay.
30 minutes in, which is great.
And on the other side of the commercial?
Will be more Joe Terranova, Stephanie Link, Bill Baruch, and a little bit of, I'll be sprinkled on top.
Okay.
Good. You good with that?
Yeah.
We're good with that?
I think we got a surprise guest.
It's the first time I've hosted this show from here. So I appreciate you guys being gentle, fragile. All right. We are just getting started, which is factually inaccurate because the show's half over. But coming up, we're going to have a pop for Paramount. And to Joe's point, let's not say the name.
Everyone knows Paramount. We know who's coming.
Who is it?
Oh,
don't say it.
Viewers.
Surprise guest will join us with more on the Paramount Pop. Plus, we'll hit the trades on two big stocks. We talked Amex earlier. Hit more on them. And Intuitive Surgical, Halftime Halfway, is back in 2 minutes.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
All right, welcome back. Shares of movie and TV company Paramount rallying right now. They're up 8%. the Top Gun franchise owner flying on the back of a New York Times report that Sony and Apollo are talking about making a joint bid to buy the company. Remember, Paramount also had advanced talks with Skydance Media, which is run by David Ellison, of course, the son of Oracle founder Larry Ellison. Bottom line, there is a lot of action around Paramount and mystery guest Jim Labenthal joining us now. He owns it. Talk to me, Goose.
All right, Brian. First off, great A block. Take a little Gatorade break here because there's a lot going on. There's two huge positives going on for the company, and there is one pretty big whiskey tango foxtrot element here. The two positive things are operationally, the company is doing better than expected. They're generating free cash flow. They've accelerated profitability timeline for Paramount Plus, and they have no near-term maturities of debt until 2027. That's number one. Number two, people want to buy this company. All right, the news today, Sony and Apollo may team up to buy the company at a price that looks like it's in the low 20s. So this begs the question of why is the stock then down, you know, meaningfully this year, meaningfully over the last year, and trading at roughly 12 times if Apollo wants to buy it at 20 times? The answer is Sherry Redstone. Sherry Redstone, for reasons of her own, really wants to do a deal with Skydance. Now, those reasons may be legitimate to her. I'm not going to take that away. She wants to keep the studio name intact to honor her father. Again, I'm not going to delegitimize that. She also wants to get out of her A shares. She's got some of her own debt to deal with. Here's the problem. If she goes down the road of taking a substandard deal compared to the Apollo offer, which, by the way, needs to be confirmed, but if she does that, there's going to be tremendous legal liability. I don't think she, the officers of the company or the directors of the company, really want to take on that legal liability. I really don't think so. But we're going to have to wait and see. This is a controlling shareholder, and I can't predict that she will do the logical and safe thing for herself.
Well, she's got a couple billion reasons to want to do the deal.
She sure does. Jim, I got to ask you a question. Good to see you on a Friday.
Joe, good to see you too. You were too hard on yourself on Netflix, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think we owe the viewers that when you talk in a particular direction, it doesn't go that way. But anyway, Jimmy, I know you've been in Paramount a long time, and I'm asking you this question for the educational benefit of the viewers itself. You've been in a long time, and let's say you get your 20 plus, you know, end game for the share, $20, $25, whatever the case may be. Do you, when you look back on it, all the mental capital that you've spent on this, do you think it was worth it to have made the initial investment in Paramount?
Absolutely not. And Joe, it's a great question. I hope that you knew that answer because I've been trying over the last couple of months to really make that clear to everyone. You know, I have a style of investing. Joe, you know exactly what it is. It's fundamental analysis. I put together what I think the fair value of the company should be in a private market transaction. If it's selling at a discount, I'll go and buy those shares. That usually works, but just like any investment style, there are times that it doesn't work. This has been an absolute horror show. Frankly, I'm embarrassed by it, but every day, and Joe, you know this too, every day you've got to decide what to do with your position on that day, given the information at hand. And given the information at hand, this is a hold for me. I will tell you, I'm not adding to it because of just, you know, this wild card factor of Sherry Redstone. But I hope I've been clear in my answer to you.
Absolutely.
It's like Penance Friday here on Halftime Report. Everybody, you know, which we appreciate the raw honesty. And to your point, the viewers and the listeners deserve it. Jim, thank you, buddy. Have a good Friday and a good weekend. All right, there are more committee stocks that are on the move. First up, let's talk very quickly. American Express, higher, beating on earnings, beating on revenue. Steph, you not just own it, it's a top five position.
Yeah, it is a big position, and they've done a great job in terms of executing. And I think that the biggest number that I took away was the card spend number at 7%, and U.S. card spend at 8% accelerated sequentially. So they did a very good job on revenues, on earnings, net interest income with 3% better than expected. Expenses were 4% lower than expected. They just absolutely did a very, very good job in a kind of challenging environment.
If I could, real quick on this, you know, Josh Brown has been talking about the thesis. It's been written. I've been talking about it privately with financial advisors. Are higher rates actually stimulating the economy? You have higher affluent consumers that have the ability to spend more. They have higher credit quality. And I think the earnings for American Express are evidence to what Josh and others are talking about, that in fact, yeah, those higher rates are actually stimulating the economy because they're earning more income from
their investments. That was Bill's point at the top. You got $10 million. And by the way, there are millions of people that have $10 million or more dollars.
Yes.
It's hard to believe, but it's true. Printing 5% money, some of it tax-free, $500,000 a year, not touching their principal. And they're like, we're not flying coach.
Yeah.
We're going up front, and we're going to take that trip of a lifetime. Very quickly, Joe, Intuitive Surgical down despite topping estimates.
Yeah, and this is called good news, bad price action. I would put Intuitive Surgical, which is one of the better performing healthcare names year to date, in the momentum basket. The momentum factor is rolling over right now, unfortunately. Intuitive Surgical is part of that decline.
Thank you. All right, now let's get some of the news headlines outside of the market with Silvana Hanau. Silvana.
Hey, Brian, good to see you. All right, some signs of optimism this morning that a conflict between Israel and Iran may not escalate. In the wake of Israel's apparent attack on an Iranian airbase and nuclear site overnight, Iranian state media described the incident as an attack by infiltrators rather than Israel specifically. A senior Iranian official tells Reuters there were no plans for a response from Tehran. The EPA has designated two forever chemicals as hazardous substances under a new Superfund law, making polluters, not taxpayers, responsible for their cleanup. The companies could also face billions of dollars in liabilities. The move comes after the EPA's ruling last week that water utilities reduced the chemicals in drinking water to near zero levels. And just hours after the midnight release of the Tortured Poets Department, Taylor Swift had another surprise for her fans. She announced it was actually a double album and dropped the anthology at 2 a.m. The album, which Swift announced at the Grammys, features collaborations with Post Malone and Florence and the Machine, Brian.
Never at a loss for surprises from Taylor Swift.
That's right.
Savannah, thank you very much.
Sure.
He thinks those albums will sell.
Oh, sure.
Wild speculation. Still ahead, the man, Mike Santoli, is going to join us with his midday word. Halftime Report is back right after this.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, the Dow is up, but that is not the story of the market. Let's get more on the midday market word. Senior markets commentator Michael Santoli joining us. And Mike, Dow may be up, but again, who cares? Yeah. There is a lot happening under the hood of this market.
Well, there's a whole lot happening at the very top of the NASDAQ and the S&P, which is really weighing on those indexes. I think the equal weight S&P is actually like flattish or better right now. And what it does tell you is we have this market, we have to contend with this for the last several weeks in this pullback, which is the most crowded stocks of this market also happen to be the biggest and most expensive ones. So you have to give a lot of room for them to just sort of reset when there is this massive rotation going on, when basically people are saying, and also when you get Netflix, a blowout quarter, and the market kind of says, sorry, what else you got, and sells off the stock, maybe it says that next week's earnings for the big guys is not going to be magic. Now, I think that actually sets us up better because here we are cleaning up positioning and having a 5% pullback and also having these relentless intraday declines. Every time the market pops its head up, it gets swatted. So I think you're pretty much draining away a lot of the short-term optimism. All of the oversold indicators in the very short term are flashing. We should bounce soon, but it's not clear that'll
okay,
be the business of Friday.
And
afternoon.
I know. Okay, Katie, we're probably gonna go a little long here. So we'll say that this is called producing from the chair. I'm looking at my fact set here. All the Mag 7 are down. NVIDIA is down 4.5%. Jeff Kilberg pointing out, thank you, Jeff, 17% off its highs. All Mag 7 are down. Every oil and gas stock is up. I mean, that's
That's rotation.
You get your first bad mark on the show. I said it was down 17% at the beginning of the show already. NVIDIA. I pointed that
What's
out.
What's that?
I said NVIDIA was down 17% at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think what's really important.
To be fair, the earpiece is in this ear.
Besides NVIDIA being down 17%, it's really, look, to me, the heart of the rally and the revenue growth came in the form of the semiconductors. I think the semiconductors are down, the SMH might be down 11% this month alone.
Yeah.
And I think ARM is
down. The EcoWake, the XSD is down for the year.
Right. And ARM Holdings is down 11% as well today. So, yeah, it's the mega caps, but, you know, we've talked at nauseam about how important the semiconductors were to this market. And to see the semiconductors deteriorate in that capacity, the market is going to have a hard time bouncing if you've got that negative performance.
Yeah. Well, it will. I mean, but the other piece of it is if you throw up a one-year chart and it looks like, oh, look at that. Look at all the air under there. And it looks like it's okay. And the long-term story is fine. So the market overshoots in both directions. I think that we also had a narrative overshoot to a degree when it came to, you know, we can have strong growth, good earnings, Fed rate cuts, and tame yields. And, you know,
well, Mike,
having that scramble.
To quote Joe T, you get your first bad marks on the show.
Yeah.
Because toward the top of the show,
yes,
Joe said, we got to remember, we're still only 5%
well, that's true.
Off our all-time highs. You see what I just did there?
Let's not forget, seasonally, this was April, an election year. We come down, we settle in. Talk to me in 2 months. Where were we in June and July? I don't like, and Joe pointed out earlier in the show, that we blew through the NVIDIA gap back on February 21st. That's not good. With the S&P, NASDAQ blew through there. Now we're in sort of an open air territory here.
You're kind of right there, though.
Yeah.
49, right there. 80.
I was hoping we'd close above it on the week.
I don't want to speak for Mike, but Mike, I think your point was, we got to remember, and Steph, you also said this earlier, a lot of people made a lot of money in the stock market the last couple of years. Okay, we're still in their all-time highs. The question is, are they selling now because they can, because they've made a ton of money? Why not? Tax day was just the other day. Maybe they got to raise some money for taxes.
I don't think that's who's selling, though. I think this is systematic algorithm. This is quant funds.
It doesn't have to be one or the other. But yes, there is a systematic element of this unwind where basically everybody who's a trend follower was super long at the end of March.
Yeah. Paul Bill's buddies in Chicago.
2% along the way. Yeah.
It's the Chicago guys.
It feels like the last time we had a reaction in the market like this was Jackson Hole in 2022, when Fed Chair Powell, who spoke this week, surprised people. Now, we didn't get Jackson Hole Powell this week, but he held a pretty hard line.
Because look what's happening. I think I'm so tired. It's been a long week. Was it Goolsbee this morning that basically said if housing stays hot? Like, they're all starting to whisper.
But
they're trying to shuffle people into the no-cut camp, Steph. Look over this way.
And if we don't get cuts, this is exactly what's happening in the market. The Russell 1000 growth is down 165 basis points, and the Russell 1000 value is up 32.
Yeah, I mean, but the regional banks are up today. So if we thought it was going to be like rates are going to choke off the economy, I'm not sure regional banks would be up today.
Yeah.
Right? So I think it's a very scrambled storyline.
I just think it's rotation.
Yeah. 100%. Yes, exactly.
It's into value versus growth, and that's what's going on.
The only, maybe the big question is how long does the rotation last? But I know this block is over.
Yeah.
So if we're going to talk about it, it's got to be the next block. We're going to take a short commercial break. Markets, NASDAQ, lows of the day, or close to it. We're back right after this. Welcome back. So, yeah, it's Friday, but it's been a tough week for stocks. But we did, as always, find some diamonds in the rough that are committee members own. Not all doom and gloom out there today. United Airlines. By the way, United, you're welcome. Personally, I've been on like 40 flights already this year. Up big, Joe, on earnings.
It is, and I would not chase it here. I wouldn't chase it at all. This is a catch-up. There's a little bit of mean reversion to what Delta has done so far year-to-date. Earnings much better than feared. That was what was reported earlier in the week. We've had a nice rally. Don't chase here.
Okay, Steph. Morgan Stanley.
Yeah.
Big week.
Big week.
You own it?
I do. I own it. It's a very big position. I think that this one can play catch up. It's lagged. It's down 2%, but the group is up about 6-7% year to date. And I thought the quarter was really one of the best in the industry from the institutional side, wealth management, NII, expenses. I mean, their efficiency ratio was 300 basis points better than what people expected. And yet I think that there's still more that they can do. And they have this new CEO. He comes from investment banking, and you better believe that they're going to actually gain a lot of market share, I think, in investment banking.
You're not worried about the SEC poking around?
No, actually, I bought more on that news. I think it's it's not new news, number one. And number two, it shouldn't have been down 5%.
Not just them, by the way. Bank of America, too. And got an upgrade.
Regulators
today
are everywhere. Oh, Bank of America today? Yeah, I own that one as well. So does Bill. They had a mixed quarter, to be honest with you. But what they did show is better NII, net interest income, on a sequential basis. They were the only big six to do that. Everybody else had a sequential decline. So that was pretty impressive. Expenses were a little elevated, but I think that that's kind of a one-time thing. And stock's awfully cheap at 1.1.
We missed a chance for the Chiron, the graphic back to life. BAC.
Oh, God.
Don't roll your eyes. I thought that was mediocre at best. United Health, Bill.
Earnings beat. I mean, they do one thing really, really, really well. They always beat earnings. Yeah. And, you know, despite the cyber attack, despite some of the premium worries that were going through the space, they continue to do what they do best and beat earnings. And they laid great groundwork. I mean, the stock has performed very well since then. We own it. It's a ballast within our portfolio.
And what you just said in plain English is like a lot of insurance companies now, they're taking a lot in, but they may not be paying a lot out, which is the whole insurance, the point. But I remember when gas was soaring, people complained. And if you have the means, and I know millions don't, so I understand that. Believe me, my dad owned a gas station growing up. It's like, if you're complaining about your health insurance premiums, maybe buy a little United Health, yeah, right? If gas prices are too high, maybe buy some of the refiners or Exxon just to say, you know what? I'm sort of kind of paying myself here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was a big fear that the pickleball thesis, when all these people
What the heck is the pickleball thesis?
Well, a lot of people, elder people that now have to go get procedures, and there were the cost of the procedures.
They're blowing out their knees.
That was a big issue.
Oh, I got Mahjong elbow.
Yes.
Oh, my
yes.
God.
That, so that no young plays pickleball?
No. I mean, you should see
Dominoes Archer. Shoulder.
Very young people playing pickleball, but a lot of pent up procedures. It was just catered within that relative narrative, but it was a lot of pent up procedures post pandemic that are now taking place, and it costed these companies quite a bit of money. So that was a big fear, and they've skated through it.
Pickleball trade.
The pickleball thesis. It sounds kind of like a movie or something the 70s.
A comedy.
Stay with us. Final trades at probably the end of my career coming up right after this. Just over a minute left. Time for final trades. Bill, you're up first.
Micron, in a market like this, everybody can really forget about the stocks that have done really well. And yeah, it's pulled back pretty sharply from its high, but within the news, they got a $6 billion grant to build a chip factory. The trough of memory demand, I think what's covering that earnings gap, $100 to $105 is a target here to be looking to buy it.
I see their P&G stuff.
Yes. I thought the quarter...
The
Swiffer thesis. I thought the quarter was pretty good. They beat. Gross margins, again, beat on the upside by 120 basis points, 310 basis points year over year. They're doing a great job in terms of productivity. I like the products that they've got. Guide goes higher. Not cheap at 26 times, mm-hmm, but I do think it's a quality company.
And Joe?
So we've been talking, many of us on the committee, about Uber for the last several months and really for the better part of the last several years. And it's had a very powerful rally, reached a crescendo of $82 in early March. Now you get the pullback. And don't be afraid of the pullback. This is when you want to step go in and be an owner of Uber. You buy it here at $69.
Not of Uber. That's Uber. The German Uber exchange student on The Simpsons. Uber. This is Uber, not Uber. That's it for us, the exchange. Now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its complete
completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.